That's a young George Harrison singing with the Beatles on their first album in 1963. Something else George Harrison did in 1963 was to visit his sister, Louise Harrison Caldwell, in the southern Illinois mining town of Benton. While he was in Benton, the Beatles were topping the charts in England with She Loves You. But America's Beatlemania was still a few months away, and in Benton, George Harrison was just Mrs. Caldwell's kid brother. I'm Jim Meadows. Today on Focus, we'll look back at George Harrison's pre-celebrity trip to Illinois. I'm in love with you. Our program continues after the news. Welcome to Focus. I'm Jim Meadows. The Beatles, of course, in their early days, performing From Me to You, and perhaps one of the first Beatle recordings heard in America, because it was heard in a broadcast on radio in southern Illinois when George Harrison was in the country to visit his sister, Louise Harrison Caldwell. Today's program is about fame and what it does to our perceptions of a person. When George Harrison was in visiting his sister, he was famous in England with all the attributes that brought along for being a member of the Beatles, but he was pretty much unknown in America. And George Harrison, in that 1-2 week visit, got to be a normal person visiting a relative for perhaps the last time in his life. He was a normal person then, but now we look back at him as being a member of the Beatles, so that visit becomes a matter of particular interest, and that's why a historical marker is being dedicated in the little southern Illinois town of Benton this Saturday, and that's why the governor has declared this Saturday George Harrison Day in Illinois in memory of that visit. George Harrison died in 2001, so we can't ask him about the trip. We're going to talk to some other people who have studied the trip in detail, and one of them is sitting here with me now. He's Bob Bartell, a huge fan of the Beatles, for starters. I think that's a true statement.
Yeah, sometimes called the fifth Beatle, but I don't go by that, though.
Well, Bob, you, thanks for coming in from Springfield to talk with us. You've made a documentary about George Harrison's visit called A Beatle in Benton, the musical birthplace of the Beatles in America. Our other guest with us right now wrote a book about that same visit called Before He Was Fab. Jim Kirkpatrick is on the phone with us from southern Illinois. Good morning, Jim, and welcome to the show. Jim, do we have you? Well, we're going to try to get hold of Jim Kirkpatrick later. Bob, I'm going to tell me, first of all, to put this in your own in context, how far back does your awareness and interest in the Beatles go?
To 1964, February the 9th.
That would be about the time that the Beatles appeared on the Ed Sullivan Show. That's my guess.
Yep, that's it.
I was 7 at the time. I remember watching them, and it was just totally outside of any reference point I had. What impact did that make on you?
Well, I think it was the first time it seemed like the light switch went from black and white to color. It was a time of change, because obviously history-wise, we lost JFK. The Beatles sort of took a generation of us baby boomers and just sort of gave us a lot of happiness, a lot of goals, a lot of truths, a lot of meaningful moments that we still share to this day with other people that are generations coming up. And, you know, I'm so happy that and overjoyed, owed to joy, I suppose, for the fact that George Harrison came to Illinois in '63, which I I was not aware that he was there when I was 14, but, you know, back then. But most definitely, it made history and world news. So, yeah, we're still celebrating his presence there in Benton.
That's an interesting incident to talk about. And let's just give it a little context. The Beatles were just becoming big, really big in England at this time in the fall of 63, when the four members of the band got a chance to get away and go on probably their last vacation for a while, because
right.
they toured pretty much nonstop for a long period.
Right.
And the other Beatles, I think, went to vacations in Europe. And George Harrison came to America because that's where his sister was.
Right. Louise's husband, Gordon, was a coal mining engineer. They'd lived a while up at the Arctic Circle, developing heavy mining equipment for gold retrieval. Louise always said it was really terribly cold up there. Told Gordon they better move down to the lower 48. Well, they didn't go there immediately. They went to Peru, the country, and where Gordon again was developing heavy equipment to get the gold out of that country. Then back up to the Arctic Circle, and then back. They saw a posting on the bulletin board. Friedman Coal Company in West Frankfurt needed a coal mining engineer, and he applied and got the job, and that's what brought the Caldwell family to Benton. March 10th of 1963.
So they'd only been living there a few months.
Mm-hmm.
And I've seen the description. I think it's both in the documentary and in Jim Kirkpatrick's book, is how they were welcomed into the community
right.
pretty quickly. And it was just a few months later when George and one of his other brothers, Peter Harrison, came to visit. And it was really just a visit by by Louise's brothers, just to see their sister and see the sights around Southern Illinois.
Yeah, as Louise said, you know, he was my kid brother, so it wasn't about him being George the Beatle. It was them coming to see their sister and nephew and niece and just chilling out. Paul and Ringo went to Paris, and John went to Spain with Epstein. So, you know, it was... first visit of any of the Beatles in America was right there in Franklin County, Benton, Illinois. A lot of things happened during that course of time that he spent there. He did more than just sleep there. I mean, he did do a lot, interacted with a lot of the people from there. Even watched the Ed Sullivan show that he was soon going to be on.
That must have been interesting, because I don't know I don't think his booking had been set up by then, so... He wasn't thinking, I'm going to be on that show in 5 months.
Well, Epstein in August of 63 had...
And we're talking Brian Epstein, Beatles manager.
He in August of 1963 had made the deal with Mr. Sullivan for them to appear February of 64.
So the Beatles were already booked mm-hmm. as he was watching that show in Southern Illinois.
Right.
Here's a call out to all you old Beatle fans out there. Do you remember when you first discovered them? Did you buy their records? Did you watch them on the Ed Sullivan Show? Did you perhaps scream your head off at a concert with the Beatles? Well, we'll take your calls at 1-800-222-9455, 1-800-222-WILL, and you can also email us at will-talk@illinois.edu. That's will-talk@illinois.edu. Now, it's my understanding is that in her own way, Louise was trying to promote her brother's band mm-hmm. in the U.S. and was trying to contact radio stations in the region about getting the Beatles records on the air, even while they were still trying to get a U.S. label.
Well, that's correct. Brian Epstein, Dick James, and George Martin were sending correspondence to Louise there at 113 McCann. Louise being the only relative of any of the Beatles in America, she was more or less the, as I call it, the HQ for the pre-invasion. Her goal was to find a label to help Mr. Epstein and George Martin in America to get something that the Beatles might be able to transfer their EMI music to a local label or medium-sized label, even if they could find that. Louise went to St. Louis to VJ, and they were just about going out of business. She sent Brian a letter saying, you know, forget VJ, they're about ready to go out of business. You need a much bigger label than that. Of course, Capitol Records was a subsidiary of EMI, and
they were sort of slow to catch on to the idea that the Beatles might go somewhere.
I mean, yeah, I mean, come on. I mean, these guys were the biggest thing in Europe, you know.
Well, let me go ahead and bring a second voice into here, and this is someone who actually did meet George Harrison in Southern Illinois in 1963. Marsha Raubach, welcome to the program. And we've lost Marsha Raubach. This is not our day for phone calls. Jim Kirkpatrick is with. Excuse me. Let me go back to you. And having a little bit of problem with the phone connections there.
Can I talk about the radio station in St. Louis that said, "Go away, don't bother us."
That was KXOK,
yes.
Wasn't it? Which it was used to be a big top 40 station in St. Louis. I remember
right. Listening
to them at times when I was traveling through the St. Louis area. They were certainly playing the Beatles eventually.
Eventually.
But just getting a letter from a band member's sister wasn't enough to impress them.
No, they said people with guitars just aren't quite what they're looking for. That was the Bobby Darins, the Bobby V's, the Bobby Rydells, all the Bobby people. That's what they wanted. They didn't want three guys with a guitar and a drummer. That just didn't make any sense for the American market.
And that's something to remember, I think, is that we're so used to hearing the Beatles today, whether or not you have any interest in them, they're part of the soundtrack. They're on the oldies stations. They're the band that's influencing a lot of other musicians working today. Then they were new. I noticed in your documentary, because we'll talk to a little later about a local band that George Harrison sat in with, the Four Vests, and
right. One
of those band members listening to Louise's copy of the Please Please Me album, saying, well, this is a new sound. And that seems to be the first description that would come up, is that this is something new in terms of the pop music in 1963.
Well, that was so new that the Four Vests at a sock hop at the local high school there in, let's see, August of 63 played a lot of the Beatles record, you know, music that was on their LP, Please Please Me, at a sock hop. And the kids, as they told me, were just like, wow, what is this? But, you know, Four Vests were probably the first Beatles tribute band. Little history there.
Okay. We're going to try to talk to Marsha Raubach again. Marsha, good morning. Are you with us?
I am.
So glad to have you with us. And, of course, you're an old hand at radio because you were dumb. You were working on the radio in Southern Illinois when you were a teenager.
Right. I think I was 14 when I first became a DJ.
And your station, your dad was the station manager,
the manager and part owner.
The station we're talking about was WFRX AM in West Frankfort, Illinois, not far from Benton, where George Harrison was visiting. I was a broadcasting student down in Southern Illinois in the 70s, and I remember listening to WFRX. A lot of college kids worked there at the time. What sort of station was it in 1963? Were they playing rock and roll music?
Well, when I started, of course, everything on the radio back in the 60s was what we called middle of the road. We were playing everything. And WFRX was playing, you know, all the Frank Sinatra, Nat King Cole, probably more in that vein, rather than, you know, Elvis Presley, what the teenagers were listening to. But then when I was given the opportunity to do my show, Saturday Session, I started playing all the rock and roll songs, and I don't think they were played any other time on the station except for my show.
Okay, so you were the rock and roll corner. Can you remember what was big in 1963?
The Beach Boys.
Well, they were just getting started, weren't they?
Right. But, you know, Chubby Checker, we were playing some Elvis. Bobby Vinton, of course, was very popular. And, you know, everything was so broad back then. I mean, we were playing Peter, Paul, and Mary and the Chiffons, some Motown. The music was everywhere.
So how did you get connected with Louise's little brother, George?
Well, of course, I've always said I was in the right place at the right time. If we had not moved to West Frankfort in 1956, if my father had not been in radio for all those years, I would never have had the opportunity to meet George and had the program at the station. And, of course, if Louise had never moved to Benton, Illinois, none of this would be happening this weekend. But with Louise moving to the area and with her coming to the station in the summer of 1963, bringing the music, of course, she was the front person for the Beatles here in the United States, trying to get KMOX in St. Louis and some of the larger market stations to play the Beatles. She brought the started bringing the music out to the station, and my father introduced her to me because, of course, I was the teenager playing the rock and roll music. So Louise did give me From Me to You, which was the first record that I played. I think after that, I had a copy of Love Me Do.
Okay.
And then, of course, when George came over here, he did want to meet the DJ who'd been playing his music.
I'm wondering, in the context of the other music that you were playing on your program in 1963, what did the Beatles sound like to you at the time?
They were totally different from anything I was playing. I mean, the British invasion had not happened, so we were, had not been exposed to, you know, any other of the groups.
No Cliff Richards,
no
nothing.
No, not even Cliff Richards. And so that music was just totally different. And in 2010, when I did an interview with the BBC on the British invasion, I think their remark was, you know, they felt the significance of this story was not even the fact that we were one of the first stations, or the first station maybe, to play them regularly, but in fact, it just virtually went unnoticed.
We're talking with Marsha Raubach, who gave George Harrison his first U.S. Radio interview in 1963 when he was in Southern Illinois visiting his sister Louise, also talking to Bob Bartell, coming in from Springfield, a big Beatles fan and collector and maker of the documentary video A Beatle in Benton, the musical birthplace of the Beatles in America, and someone who had a big role in preserving the house that Louise Harrison lived in, where George Harrison visited. All of this is the reason why a historical marker is being dedicated in the town of Benton this Saturday, which has been designated as George Harrison Day in Illinois, to mark the 50th anniversary of that visit. We welcome your phone calls and thoughts and questions at 1-800-222-9455, 1-800-222-WILL. Catherine went to our Facebook page. Interesting, talking about the impact of the Beatles in general. She writes, "I've never been to a Beatles concert, but the day I was in labor with my oldest daughter, Paul McCartney was a guest on the Fresh Air program. They played Blackbird, and I cried. It still makes me tear up to think about it." And I'm just thinking of all the impact that this music has played in the lives of a lot of people in a particular generation. Did you see that playing out yourself, Marsha, as the Beatles' fame grew after George's visit?
Yes. Afterwards, the impact is still happening in my life, I think. And I think the impact of the Beatles for the generations, you know, that followed his coming and the Beatles coming to the U.S. in the 60s is still happening. I mean, their music virtually could have been over by 75, you know, 10 years later. They could have been forgotten, you know, by the year 2000. You know, maybe nobody remembered them, but I think their music just continues to grow. I just can't think of any other artist or group that can match what the Beatles did.
In the meantime, back in 1963, talking to 20-year-old George Harrison, what sort of guy was he?
Well, he was always, you know, I thought he was quiet. Of course, everyone said he was the quiet Beatle. You know, he was very unassuming, very modest. You know, my first reaction when I walked into the station, you know, I looked at George, and of course Lou and Peter were standing there, and he just looked so different than the boys that, you know, in the United States, the haircut, the clothes, everything was different. And, you know, I had that British accent, but I felt that he was a very, very nice person, and I could see, you know, even then, I think, the spiritual side of George.
It's interesting. And what sort of music did he like to talk about during your interview?
Well, I'm not sure, because one of the questions I would love to have asked him, I thought about it later, was, you know, who did you like? I know they liked the Beach Boys. I don't know if I asked him directly, you know, who was his... I know I didn't. I didn't ask him who was his favorite group. I wish I had. But, you know, I know from reading about the music that the Beatles liked to do, there were several artists that they really admired.
Okay. And you did not record this interview, did you?
No. Don't we wish we had?
When you had him on, you knew he was on a band that was doing pretty well in England, but I guess it was hard to imagine the heights of fame that the Beatles were about to climb to.
The fact that they were big in England really meant nothing, because really no other group had attained any notoriety in America at that time. So it was not something that we could even have imagined.
Okay. Maureen writes on our Facebook page about her reaction to the excitement. The first time I saw Paul McCartney, 20 years and 6 concerts later, every show is still the best 3.5 hours of my life. And I don't know if I know that George Harrison performed with a band in town. I don't know if you had a chance to see him perform while he was visiting Benton. Bob Bartel, maybe you can talk a little bit more about this and George Harrison's sitting in with the Four Vests, and also the music that he showed interest in, because your documentary includes an interview, I believe, with the Four Vests lead guitarist Kenny Welch.
Kenny Welch, yeah.
And Kenny Welch on his own was, you know, a pretty experienced journeyman musician.
Right.
Besides playing with this band, which was, a pretty successful bar band around Southern Illinois.
Yeah.
He had done some work down, in Nashville.
Yeah.
Okay. So, you know, he had been around.
Session player.
And the band, I understand, was ready to play some of the Beatles' material and have George Harrison sit in with that, but George wanted to sit in on their material, it sounded like.
Yeah, well, Gabe, in discussion with him for my documentary, he said...
And that's Gabe...
McCarty.
Who was another member of the Four Vests.
The Four Vests, the one who really put in a lot of time with George when George was there in Benton. They did Hank Williams, you know, You're Cheating Heart. They did some, you know, Chuck Berry, Roll Over Beethoven, you know, the standards, you know, that every musician would know. The interesting thing that I sort of recognized, it took some time to think about this, but when George and Kenny were plugging along and gigging there at Louise's home, they were exchanging guitar licks, and when... Kenny had that Rickenbacker. George's eyes got about the size of a silver dollar because he wanted one. But he wanted to learn how to play San Antonio Rose by Bob Wills.
And that's just a Texas swing number.
Yeah.
Very successful in its day, but it's not a tune that the Beatles ever covered.
No, but he seemed to be fascinated by Bob Wills and that song. So Kenny, being the picker that he was, the session player, he did it for George. George loved it, and then George says, well, let me show you something that we're doing. And, of course, that's on my DVD. It goes dun, 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 dun. And that was a guitar lick that John Lennon was working on. They had no song attached to it, but it was just a guitar lick, and they were going to use it, obviously, in 65.
And they did. So two years after George Harrison played it for Kenny Welch.
Right, there it is.
It showed up on Day Tripper. That must have been a little bit of an eerie experience to come across it a couple of years later.
Well, and it's funny, too, because Kenny would say, you know, I heard a couple of my guitar licks that George took from me on a couple of the Beatles songs. But he said, you know, it was no big deal. You know, guitar players, they do that all the time. They watch another guy play, and they like that, and so they incorporate it within their own style.
Okay. We're going to take just a short break right now, and we'll be back to talk more about the Beatles and George Harrison's visit 50 years ago this month to Southern Illinois. This is Focus on WYLL. Welcome back to Focus. I'm Jim Meadows. We are talking about the Beatles and George Harrison, who was famous in England when he came to visit his sister 50 years ago this month. He visited his sister, Louise Harrison Caldwell, in Benton, the mining town in Southern Illinois. Our guest today, we're talking with Bob Bartell, a big Beatles fan and maker of the documentary A Beatle in Benton, the musical birthplace of the Beatles in America. Talking with Marcia Raubach, who spoke to George Harrison for WFRX Radio in Southern Illinois in West Frankfort when he visited in 1963. And joining us now is Jim Kirkpatrick. And Jim, welcome to Focus.
Good to be here.
And you're author of a book about this visit, George. Before he was Fab, George Harrison's First American Visit, which actually came out around 2000.
That's correct. It was right at the time of the millennium.
What got you interested in researching this visit, talking to all these people for the work?
Well, I think it was kind of like Bob had said. You know, when the effort was made to save the home in Benton, you know, a lot of us got interested in what was going on. And at that time, I was working in a governmental office, and I attended some of the meetings. And I heard Louise talking about when her brother was in Southern Illinois and how she had taken him to the radio station and he was interviewed on the radio and how Marcia had played the first Beatle record on WFRX and he bought a guitar in Mount Vernon and played with a local group at the El Dorado VFW. And I thought, this is really obscure stuff. It needs to be preserved.
And was it difficult at the time? It sounds like Bob was doing it at the same time, but was it difficult tracking down all these people? And were they interested in talking?
You know, really, it took more time tracking down the people and getting commitments to interview them than it actually took to put the book together.
People were just hard to find, or people were not really interested in...
No, you know, people have busy schedules and everything like that, and a lot of times, you know, it's just a matter of like saying, yeah, I can talk to you, but let's do it, you know, in 3 weeks or something like that. And when you're talking about, you know, talking to 20 different people over a period of time, that can slow down the process. But it was a very rewarding experience, and I got to talk to three of the surviving members of the Four Vests and Marcia, and it was very rewarding.
That makes me wonder, the question comes to mind for both of you, Jim and Bob, how much importance did the people you talked to place on this visit by George Harrison to Southern Illinois?
I think it's kind of interesting because I had some interesting comments when talking to Gabe McCarty, who was the leader of the Four Vests, and I said, Gabe, you know, you spent quite a bit of time with one of the Beatles, and what do people think? And he said, well, you know, I've never really talked about it that much because I don't think people would have believed me to begin with. So, but they were all proud of the fact that they had an opportunity to meet George Harrison and particularly before the Beatlemania and everything like that. So it was kind of like a preview of what was to come.
Marcia, if I could ask you about being one of those people who met George Harrison, what was that something you told people about often in the years ahead, or did you wait till somebody came to track you down?
Well, not really, because I was editor of my high school paper my senior year, which would have been right after, you know, when George left in September, I was already at the beginning of my senior year. So I wrote a story about the visit in the November 1963 Redbird Notes. I had, you know, George had given me a picture, an autographed picture, and I ran that picture with a story that started out: this past summer I was fortunate enough to meet George Harrison, a member of England's sensational new beat music quartet. So I did write about it, and I am so glad that I wrote about it because I still had that high school paper. So all of my classmates who are coming to West Frankfort next week to celebrate our 50th class reunion, they all remember being part of that story because it ran in the Redbird Note. So it's not that I didn't talk about it. It's just the fact that the significance of George's being here is still sinking in after all these years.
And that's something that comes to mind as I turn to you, Bob, because you played a role in preserving the home that Louise Harrison lived with her husband at the time, Gordon Caldwell, which they only lived in for a few years.
Yeah.
And George Harrison visited there for 2 weeks, but you made the case that this was a house worth preserving. And maybe you could talk about what was your elevator speech, so to speak, on
my pitch?
Your pitch.
Well, after, you know, I went down to Benton, it was in December, like December the 10th of 1994. I'm a licensed private detective by trade, so doing paper trails is what I do a lot, you know. So I knew how to do certain things. So I went down to the library, looked up a 1964 phone directory, and there it was, 113 McCann Street, Louise and Gordon Caldwell. So I had an address. So I went there, and I saw the backhoe in the backyard, and everything looked okay to me, the house. You know, it just looked like, well, why would they be tearing this down? So I had seen Louise in 93, 94 at Beatle Fest talking about living in Southern Illinois. I videotaped that. So anyhow, my pitch was, since I live in Springfield, I had to go to the Capital Development Board. I went there with my video, my books on George being in Benton, the day-by-day chronicles that a man put together every day of their lives. So I said, look, here's the thing. On the title of the house, it's going to say Caldwell, or a deed or something is going to say Caldwell. It's not going to say Harrison. And if it did say Harrison, you would never associate that with the Harrison, George Harrison family from Liverpool, England. So I gave it to them and I said, look, you know, if I'm not telling you the God's honest truth here, take my PI license and just shred it up, you know, because it's given to me by the state. It's an honorable piece of work that I do and hold very high. So they said, okay, you know, we'll take a look at it. And it went over to the preservation people, Jim Thompson. I'm sorry, Steve Thompson. Steve Thompson was a historian for there. And he looked it over and he called me up and said, hey, Bob, that you're right on, you know. He said, but the problem you're going to have, all the Beatle fans in the world probably won't save that house, but politicians will. And you've got to get some political ump behind this. And he said, like a congressman, a state senator, reps. I didn't know anybody from there. I mean, you know, I'm not a political person. So, but Jim down in Southern Illinois, who worked for, I believe it was a state senator or rep, one of the two, I was calling him. He was calling me. And the next thing I know, Congressman Pritchard's on board.
That's Glenn Pritchard that Jim Kirkpatrick worked for. Is that right, Jim?
Right, yeah.
And, you know, Jim got the political machinery that was needed to help save this house. I mean, I could only do so much. Jim could only do so much. Now we had to have the support of the powers to be to say, look, you know, this is history. This is something that belongs to the people of the state of Illinois. We definitely don't want to destroy what belongs to the people. So the effort was made. And then there was this, like Jim referred to, there was a meeting with Louise, Jim, myself, the mayor, the city attorney, Mr. Ray, the senator, mines and mineral people. I mean, everybody was there. Anybody and everybody who had anything to say about this home, whether it was going to be tore down for a 10-car parking lot or saved. So Senator Ray just put it out to him and said, we will find a way to save this home, and we will do this. And so I think he set in motion for what the political machinery was needing behind all this with Glenn Burchard. And the Beetle people all came in. I helped get petitions United States-wise. I was doing interviews around the world. The Melkoviches owned the Benton Evening News down there. So when they contacted me, they released it to AP Wire, and it just went global. And so it was like this really unknown story about one of the Fabs, and everybody was just amazed that it just slipped by them. So, you know, the effort was made by a lot of people, but I think if I, and I'm just saying this in all honesty, if I had not been there in December of 1994, that house would have been a parking lot. Not because the people down there don't care, don't get me wrong. I just think the particular history of that moment, of that location, had been lost in time. And fortunately, Benton doesn't historically move at rapid speed ahead, meaning like it's not Chicago where they just tear down whole blocks and start building something new. Benton pretty well stays the same as it was then as it is now. So the effort of finding the people was made easier, and saving the house became an important landmark for Franklin County. They saw that. They knew that. It was just convincing a certain powers to be that it could be done. And as Louise called me from Los Angeles and said, what's all this hubbub about, you know? And at first I thought it was very hysterical, but after I got to thinking about it, I realized it was very history-wise, you know, and historical. So I said, well, it can be, Lou, if you come back and help me save the home, because we can make it into a bed and breakfast. We can't go to Maui to your brother's home. We can't go to the Dakota. We can't work into Beetle Fans Go, but we could go here, your former home, and we can have, you know, the place dressed up. We'll help donate, you know, lots of our Beatles collection to give it that pizzazz. You know, when you walk in there, you feel like you're really involved in a really Beatle cool thing. So that's what happened, and the powers to be said okay. They put their stamp of approval on it, and the home was saved.
I want to play an audio clip now, and this is from your documentary. This is from, I think, at a press conference at around the time that the house was saved from demolition. Louise Harrison talking about how she felt about the house she used to live in being named a historic place.
One of the things that I was, when I first, you know, when this whole thing first started to save the house, I was a little bit, you know, okay, this is a bit silly, because he was only there for a couple of weeks. But, you know, as time went on, I realized that it was something significant. And then when they came out and said, yes, they're going to put a historical marker here, I started looking at historical markers throughout the country as I was traveling back and forth. And I realized that most historical markers that are out there throughout this country and many others are commemorating where one bunch of people slaughtered another bunch of people. And, you know, with a touch of whimsy, I thought to myself, well, you know, maybe that we're coming to the 21st century, maybe humanity is evolving to a point where we now have become sufficiently civilized that instead of always commemorating slaughter and bloodshed, we now can commemorate a very, very kind, decent, loving and gentle young man who gave the world only love and kindness and beautiful music.
And that's Louise Harrison talking about her brother, George Harrison, and about the preservation of the home she once lived in that George Harrison visited 50 years ago this month. Still time for your comments about the Beatles and George Harrison's pre-celebrity visit to his sister in Southern Illinois. And your questions for our guests, Jim Kirkpatrick and Bob Bartell, both chroniclers of the George Harrison visit, and Marsha Raubach, who interviewed George Harrison for WFRX Radio in West Frankfort 50 years ago. Our number is 1-800-222-9455, 1-800-222-WILL. The email address is will-talk@illinois.edu. Now, Bob, it was a bed and breakfast for a few years. It was the Hard Day's Night bed and breakfast.
Correct.
And it it didn't stay in business. I understand it closed a few years ago.
Yeah, it changed hands. The people that that bought it originally to save it, wonderful people, people there in Benton. But, you know, they got old and they said, hey, you know, it's time to for us to retire and go somewhere else.
And the second and the second bunch of folks weren't able to do it successfully.
Well, I think it could have been a very lucrative, and I still do think it could be very lucrative as a bed and breakfast, but you have to have dedication to it as a business. It's nice to be a fan, but if you're just a fan and you don't have any business attitude, it's not going to last.
It's a tricky thing. It's and it's apartments right now. Is there still a marker out there? Do people know? Is there anything that's let people know that the house has an association with George Harrison?
No, none.
Do you think it is still secure? I mean, it's nothing's going to happen and no one's going to come by and say, I could put a different building on this site that with a lot more apartments in it, make more money or something like that.
Well, you know, the future is not for me to predict, but anything's possible. But I suppose the good thing is it's still sitting there. It's in pretty good shape. And I think if the right investors, if there's anybody out there, would want to come down there to 113 McCann and give the owner a bid for the place, I think you'd have a lucrative business because it was, you know, constantly being used. Pete Best came there in 2008 and did a show there.
Pete Best being the original drummer before Ringo Starr for the Beatles, and he's musically active himself still these days.
Yeah, it was. He stayed in the John Lennon room. He had the whole house to himself. Of course, he didn't stay in the Ringo room, but you know, but he had the whole house to himself, and his band from Liverpool stayed at another location. I had the opportunity to talk to all of them. I've met Pete before at Beatle Fest, different things. But he did the show right there, almost directly across from the house at 113 at the high school. And it was the show that the Fabs would have put on in Germany. He said, this is what we would have played in Germany in 62, 63, whatever. And so he just, it was great. I mean, phenomenal, actually.
Jim and Bob, I'm wondering during this whole effort to preserve the house, George Harrison was alive in the 1990s. He died in 2001. Did he have anything to say about this whole effort?
I don't even know if he was aware of it. I know there was a story in People magazine at one point, and it had Louise commenting on saving the house. So if
it was certainly out there in the mass media.
Yeah, it was out there, but we have no knowledge of him ever.
Bob, had you heard anything about George Harrison being aware or having an opinion?
Well, when Louise pulled out of the at the press conference that she did, I think it was February 4, 1995, there in Benton. I was videotaping it because I thought, well, you know, this is just another part of history she's going to talk about. And then unbeknownst to everybody in that room, of course, she pulled out and it was a effort for us to go on without her. But we did, you know, we saw it through. After I videotaped all that, Louise said to me, I want you to make two copies, one for me and one for George. I'm going to send one off to George, and he'll get that, and he'll see that, you know, I'm no longer attached in any way, shape, or form to the preservation efforts, not the ownership, but just the efforts of saving her former home. So I made two copies on DVD, gave her one, and then she mailed one off to George, is what she told me.
Okay. But she felt she needed not to be associated with the preservation effort at that time.
Well, I think, unfortunately, people associated her as the new owner.
Okay. So there might be liability questions. That...
Well, people said, well, why is she the owner? I mean, what is she doing this for? Well, she was only coming back for the preservation effort. And if whoever was doing the research on this would have contacted the Franklin County Courthouse and did a tax search, they would have saw that title was not in the ownership under Louise Harrison's name anywhere. It was under the people who bought it and saved it. Nothing to do with Louise. So in a sort of a strange way, her efforts were obviously there for the good, but I think a certain segment took it as being her sort of wanting to capitalize off of something. Not true. Louise was there to preserve her family name, her brother's good name, and she made this press release, and I was as shocked as everybody else who was there, but I had videotaped it, thinking, well, you know, it's history, so... But I was able to preserve that and send it off to Louise, and then she forwarded it on to George.
This Saturday, they are dedicating a marker, not at the house, but at a park in Benton to commemorate the fact that George Harrison spent some time there. Are you going down for that ceremony?
Oh, we're putting together the George Harrison Magical Mystery Tour Bus. I'm leasing a tour bus, and we're heading out from Springfield about 9:30 a.m. on Saturday. And we're just going to be playing Beatles music and watching Hard Day's Night and, you know, singing along. I'll probably have a little trivia contest. And, you know, we'll just all be happy people going down to witness history being made in Illinois.
Jim, are you going to be down there too?
Yes. As a matter of fact, I'm part of the program putting it together. And we've got a lot of speakers. Marcia, of course, will be there. And Bob Ray from Franklin County Historic Preservation, and Bill Furry, who's the executive director of the Illinois State Historical Society. We've got a lot of entertainment, and everybody's volunteering their time. Nobody's getting paid for anything, and we've got some musicians coming in from out of state that are going to perform, and so we're expecting a great day. And everything's free.
Yes, Bob.
Yeah, and I'm one of the speakers there too, as
yeah,
well.
Yeah, Bob. Yeah.
And you know, I love Benton. Every time I go there, I get really the vibes of a really a great community who was doing so good to preserve the history of George there. So coming back and bringing 22, 23 like-minded Beatlemania people back is going to be really a fun thing.
I think it's kind of interesting. The marker dedication is right off the square. It's in the southeast corner of the square, and it's within a stone's throw of where George lost his wallet, and also the Barton and Collins furniture store where he bought a bunch of albums when he was over here. And of course, one of the albums he bought was by an obscure artist, and it had the song "I Got My Mind Set on You," which he later recorded.
That was one of really a very large hit for him in the latter part of his career.
And he bought that. He recorded that as a result of an album that he had actually bought at Barton and Collins in Benton.
Benton sways the music world from its little perch in southern Illinois. We're getting close to the end of the program. I did want to get a last word from Marcia Raubach, and you're going to be down in Benton this Saturday as well, I take it.
I will be there. I'm looking forward to seeing Bob, who I haven't seen since the Pete Best concert. And also, you know, people coming into Benton Saturday will have the opportunity to visit the Franklin County Museum, where they have the WFRX turntables, microphone. They've got a room dedicated to George Harrison, and also a car museum in Benton, and these are both right off the square. And the car museum has the WFRX transmitter that was working when George came to the station, and some other historic equipment from WFRX. And of course, you know, people can walk around the square and see Barton and Collinsbury about the records. They can walk by the house. So Bob can bring all his friends down, and they can all take a tour.
And I'm sure that house, what's the address again, Bob?
113 McCann Street.
113 McCann Street in Benton will get a lot of walk-bys on that day. George Harrison died in 2001. His music stays with us, as do the memories of the many people who knew him and knew about him as far back as half a century ago when he visited Southern Illinois. My thanks to Jim Kirkpatrick and Bob Bartell for sharing their knowledge of that visit. And Marcia Raubeck, thanks to you for sharing your memories. Welcome any additional thoughts you have about today's program on our website at will.illinois.edu/focus. Lindsay Moon is the producer of Focus. And tomorrow we'll be going to Financial Matters. That's tomorrow's show on Focus here on WILL.